Blog Talk Radio.
I stroll through the pictures, what I've left behind. You want again. I'm locked up in memories, they all intertwine. The memories in my mind. I know tomorrow, 'cause that dawn will come. You will never know what you've done.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the Stop Child Abuse Now radio show, brought to you by the National Association of Adult Survivors of Child Abuse. My name is Charlie Stecker, and I will be your host tonight. Before I begin doing any further introduction on the show, I do want to bring something to everyone's attention. My Wednesday night co-host, Penelope, had a medical emergency just pop up within the last hour, and she's actually in the ER at the moment. So if everybody could just hold her and her family up in prayer. It doesn't appear to be life-threatening, but it's definitely an emergency situation that requires emergency care. So again, just a quick plea for prayer for my normal co-host tonight, my regular co-host, Penelope. I see that Bill's jumped in, so perhaps he's going to assist me with co-hosting. That would be wonderful. Okay, now that I got that out of the way, not that it wasn't that important, very important, that's why I did it that way. I wanted to let everybody know that what NASCA's purpose is about, our mission. So here at NASCA, we have a single purpose, and that's to address the issues related to childhood abuse and trauma. It includes sexual assault, violent or physical behavior, emotional trauma, and neglect. And we do so with two goals in mind. First, educating the public, especially as related to helping society get over its taboo discussing childhood sexual abuse and the many other forms of abuse, obviously, presenting facts showing child abuse to be a pandemic, worldwide problem that affects everyone. And our second goal is to offer hope and healing. And one of those ways is through this show here. We also have our website, naasca.org. You can go on. You'll find there's a Zoom meeting midday, Sundays, Tuesdays, and Thursdays on there. But back to finish our mission statement. So we hope to offer hope and healing through numerous paths, providing many services to adult survivors of child abuse and information for anyone interested in the many issues involving prevention, intervention, and recovery. My regular guests, you know that tonight being Wednesday means a special guest night, and we do have a special guest tonight that has a very a plea that we really need to listen to and then get behind, okay? And I'm going to allow Stephen from Owensboro, Kentucky, him and his wife, unfortunately his wife isn't currently with him, Megan, but I'm going to allow him to share his story the way he wants to, because he could better convey it than I. I do remind you that if you have called into the panel, we will come to you about every 15 or 20 minutes, and we will have you interact with Stephen, ask questions, give insights. I do want to kindly request you to keep your interactions with Stephen centered around what's going on with him and his story. Not that ours might not find an alignment with it that we can identify with, but tonight's about Stephen and his story and his children. Again, thank you so much. Our call-in number, for those out there who are listening in live on Wednesday night, October 28th, 2020, the call-in number is 646-595-2118. I'll repeat that one more time. Our call-in number to be a part of the panel, 646-595-2118. And Bill Murray, our president and founder of NASCO, will be handling getting your call in and getting you in the queue. So thank you so very, very much, Bill, and thank you, everyone. In the meantime, let's get Stephen on the air and let him begin to share however is he will. Stephen, and welcome.
Hi. Prayers to Penelope.
What's that?
Yeah, I can you hear me okay?
Yeah, you said something about Penelope. Thank you very much. Yes, yes, yes. It just happened within the last half hour, 45 minutes. Stephen, I say welcome to the show. It's nice to have you, but the truth is I wish we didn't have to have you because I wish your children wasn't going through what they're going through. You're here.
It's horrendous.
Yeah, well, you're here, and we're here to, share and listen and see what we can do. Now, I know before the show began, and please forgive my ignorance, I wasn't aware, you did make me aware that Megan is not there with you.
Yes, unfortunately. I haven't been with either member of my family, really. I mean, I get visitations weekly with my son, with my oldest son, but my wife and my other child, I don't really get to see. My wife is incarcerated they've accused her of degree assault on my son, and it's not true, but. The big thing is also that, my oldest son has been subjected to a lot of pretty extensive abuse at the hands of these foster parents. And, I've even had the caseworkers and the social worker, that was, they were in charge of my visit or whatever, supervising it. And they made me hold my son for my entire visit. He's lifeless. They tell me that he had just prior that day, had a fall on some concrete steps, and he was knocked out comatose. He was lifeless. He needed to be in a hospital. And
right.
I begged him. I cried, but they made me hold him, and they just kind of laughed at me and kind of made light of it. And,
I hear you. Real quick,
just
not to interrupt you, but kind of want to give you some structure to walk on here. Is that okay with you?
Yeah, it's just really emotional. And this is also pretty hard. I'm a pretty quiet person. This takes a lot of courage out of me just to reach out like this. But I'm desperate. I love my family enough to do whatever I got to do.
And I know also, Stephen, thank you and for your service to our country as a military veteran. I, too, am a military veteran, so thank you for that, sir. And I definitely can identify with the courage it takes to share anything. And when you have something that's actively going on like you do, it's even tougher. So that is why I offer the possibility of some sort of a structured way to put this together to help you be able to give your story and also to help our audience be able to get a more methodical understanding or timeline understanding of how things came about. Is that okay with you?
Yeah, that's fine.
Okay, so share if you will. And again, Stephen, you are not obligated to share anything on here that you are not comfortable sharing. You're not obligated to answer any questions.
I'm not afraid of the truth.
the truth will set you free, but at the same time, I don't want you to feel like you have to answer something that you're uncomfortable with, okay? From any of us, including myself or any of the panelists. So with that being said, I kind of have some understanding about some of what I read that you're dealing with, and you and I have connected on Facebook a little while back, and I was looking over the story. I think as I looked over your story, one of the things that definitely would the people out there need to hear is what brought your family to the attention of the, quote, child welfare system in the first place, because there's a lot of people that have the impression that there are not a lot. Maybe there's a some that have the impression that somehow these people just show up, or there's nothing that possibly brought their eyes to the attention.
Well,
but I read through your story, and I see what you say brought them to you, and I have no doubt you're what you're sharing with us facts. So share with us in how when this began about, you know, you and your wife had the children, and then somehow child protection was brought in, if you don't mind.
Well, when I guess it really originated, like, the night of it was, like, November 25th. We went into the hospital because my son had he had a serious change in, like, his eyes and whatnot, and I just kind of, I knew he needed a doctor. I knew there was something wrong, you know. Took him in, or, you know, me and my wife, we took him in, and it turns out he had a skull fracture and a little, some bleeding on his brain and stuff, and then, you know, it was causing him to have some issues, and, I mean, they corrected it. He bounced back pretty good over, you know, but, I mean, it was really scary, you know. I mean, my wife had I didn't know it at the time, but, I mean, my wife ended up having a fall with him while I was at work on Friday, 2 days prior to that night. It was a Sunday night. And,
wow.
You know, I mean, our floors and our, you know, she was giving him a bath, and, I mean, our floors are hardwood, and they're kind of fresh still, you know. It's kind of still kind of new material there, and it was, I mean, she just hit kind of wet feet a little bit on a slippery wet floor while she was walking after giving him a bath, and slipped and fell, her leg fell out. I mean, she even snapped a tendon in her leg over it trying to catch her fall. And that,
wow.
That don't even get put into the story at all. I mean, and the way that she fell, you know, she was holding him like head to shoulder, you know, like a mom does, you know, like I always held him that way, especially if I was walking with him. I just felt safer holding him that way, a little bit more secure. But when they landed, it was head to, it was like his head was sandwiched between her head, shoulder and the floor, you know. And at the time, she was like 218 pounds, I think. And she,
uh-huh.
I mean, because she was still, you know, coming off of the labor and the pregnancy and stuff. And,
wow.
You know, it was free fall speed, you know. They're trying to say, I mean, and then they, we got to the hospital, and then when they went and took him for an x-ray, turned out that he had an older rib injury, And that was, at first they was telling us it was 2 weeks old, you know, like the injury was, to the rib injury. And they kept trying to make us answer that, and we couldn't answer for it, you know.
Right.
I mean, we tried to answer for it. We couldn't answer for it because we had no idea, you know. And then
understood.
When the you know, the detectives and everybody, my wife at the point that they I'm getting a little ahead of myself. Let me slow down. He goes.
That's okay. Take your time.
After
we
get
plenty
to,
of time.
After we get to the. Hospital and everything, all that goes down. They come back and we've got cops and everybody and social workers, you know, questioning us and stuff. And honestly, in that moment in time, especially, I mean, all we were thinking about was our son, our youngest son. That's the only thing we was worried to death about him. And then he ended up. Last time I saw my son, Ethan, my youngest son, he was being life flighted out. Well, fast forward a couple of days, we get to court. My wife hasn't been arrested yet or anything. Nothing like that has went down. They're just investigating everything. And, I mean, I understood why they were investigating. I knew that me and my wife, we didn't do anything, like, intentional. We weren't trying. I mean, it wasn't an abuse situation or nothing like that. It was an accident. I know it. And I'll get into proving it here in a little while. But, later, we get to court. The court gives us they took the kids while we was in the hospital. They didn't, you know, they had a blank form that was already, it was pre-signed and everything, and they used it to take the kid. But we got to court that Tuesday, I believe it was. Maybe it was Wednesday. It's kind of a big blur. I'm not going to lie.
Right.
But they we get to court and they tell us to the judge even, you know, the family court judge is kind of like, you know, trying to help us get to see Ethan. So she gave us a court order to go see our son Ethan in the hospital and be at his bedside and for them to tell us what was going on with him, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And we made the journey. They even gave us $40 in gas. They went and got us a gas card and gave us $40
right.
in gas to make the trip. But we get there, and we didn't get there in time for visiting hours, so we had to, you know, kind of post up overnight. And, I mean, we were kind of strapped on cash a little bit, so we, you know. But we stayed the night in Louisville. Went first thing in the morning, as soon as they opened, to go, you know, hey, we got court orders to go see our son and everything. You know, we get there, we present the court orders, and the social services lady that was there she just refused to let us see him, refused to give us any information on him, despite a court order signed by a judge.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
right,
you know, we make our drive back. First, I stopped in at my job. Because, I mean, at the time, I had a pretty awesome job I was in love with. And got my boss up to speed on everything, what was going on. And, we get home after that. A few minutes later, detectives pull in. And they come out and they tell us, you know, at this point, they've done a house search. They've done went through our neighbors. They've been up every nook and cranny we had. We had security footage, you know, from the outside. We all checked out. They came up to us like, you check out. We don't really have any evidence or anything. We want to get the, you know, make sure we got all the story right, because when you're emotional on the first night and stuff, you're kind of, you know. I said, I was saying no, not without a lawyer. But then my wife, she asked them if they had any information on Ethan. And they told her that if we went and talked to them, that they would tell us about Ethan and get us up to speed on Ethan. And at this point, we had no idea what was going on with our son. I mean, we honestly, when they didn't let us see him, we kind of, our hearts sunk together simultaneously. I mean, we felt like maybe he was dead or something. No one was telling us otherwise. No one was telling us anything. And so my wife, you know, there was no stopping her at that point. I couldn't stop her. I begged her. I know that they was just going to try to get her in there and torture her until she just gave them what they wanted. And I knew their ultimate goal would be to tell them make it sound like they was going to arrest me or her, one of us, you know, and that's exactly how it happened. But we ended up going, talking to the detectives. They don't lock me in a room, but they put me in a room not too far from the room they put her in. And they keep the doors open and stuff. They don't put no sound blockers on or anything to try to drown out what they're doing. I hear every bit of it. It goes for hours, and they're being so cruel. And this woman hasn't slept at this point for 6 days, and she is going through the worst hell that I can ever imagine. I mean, just being the one that actually fell with him, I mean, and, you know, I mean, I can only imagine what she was going through, and it breaks my heart. It gets a couple hours in, and I need a break. I'm going to go, I asked them if I can go have a cigarette, and, you know, they let me go have a cigarette, but when they was walking me out, one of the police officers put his arm around my arm, and I didn't think nothing of it at the time, but I thought it was kind of funny because I wasn't detained or anything. I mean, you know. And then once we left the room, he took his hand off my arm and we walked out. I had a cigarette. I came back in. They made it look like they was taking me in and arresting me, and told her that it was her or me. And I mean, she did exactly what I would have done in that moment if they would have put that on me, if they had me make that choice. I would have folded and played Simon Says for them, anything I had to say to get them to leave her alone, you know, to
right.
try and, I mean, and that's exactly what happened. I mean, and they got her to play Simon Says and, I mean, confess to things that later the forensics don't even agree with, like the rib injury. They got her confessing to breaking his ribs way after his ribs were ever injured. And at the time that his ribs were injured, he was in the NICU. When he was first born, he didn't have... My wife had gestational diabetes with both of our pregnancies, and she... My youngest son, he came out with some complications with his proteins and his blood sugars and stuff, you know? And that's where he was at the time of the rib injury. We didn't even get to hold him until like the day before we got to actually bring him home, because I mean they couldn't get him to take a bottle forever for the first few days there, and finally they decided to let my wife try, and he took to the bottle instantly. And it was fine.
Right.
The next day we ended up it was being able to take him home. And, I mean, but his rib injury, it happened while he was in the NICU, while he was under medical care, before we was ever able to hold him or anything. I mean, we were scared. We could have held him, but we were scared to hold him with all the wires and stuff attached to him in a feeding tube, and, you know.
Yeah, I understand, and I can identify with that, because my daughter, when she was born, literally went straight from the delivery room to the NICU in Children's Hospital in Philadelphia, and she was on life support for the first almost 6 weeks of her life. So I can identify with, you know, all the wires and the things. And actually, they normally wouldn't even let you hold them anyway, because they don't want to move anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
But I've been in while you were sharing what you have so far, and you've shared a lot with us, Stephen, and what an amazing amount of courage you show being here. And as you introduced in the beginning of the show, you are a man who normally doesn't really speak much in public or share your what's going on in your life in public, but this is very important to you. I know you and Bill Murray, our founder and the president of NASCA, had conversations in the past, correct?
Yes.
Okay. Well, Bill is actually on the panel tonight. He came in to help me out because, like I said earlier, Penelope stepped out. And I'm going to go ahead and bring Bill in and allow you and him to have a conversation, because I feel like because he kind of went through what needed to get you on the show, he probably has, well,
mm-hmm.
not probably, he has more information than I. So let's get Bill on here with you, and I appreciate you. Thank you so much, Stephen.
All right.
And Bill,
you.
You're on with.
Hey, thanks a lot, Charlie, for letting me have a little time with Stephen here. Stephen, welcome to the show. I know you were at one time booked for like 10 days ago, and that didn't work out, so we rebooked you for tonight. And originally, your wife, Megan, was supposed to be with you, so that's okay. I want to explain to the audience that I've had information sent to me from both of them. They each sent me some of the bio information that went into the building of the description of tonight's show. So I know some information that I got was from Megan, who unfortunately isn't here, and other was from Stephen. But I understand the issue. And here's why you guys are booked tonight, Stephen. We used to do a series of shows called Institutional Abuse and Enabling, and we don't do them anymore. But an awful lot of those shows had to deal with issues that arose in family courts, and in custody cases, and sometimes things like medical malfeasance or foster care, all these things, they're institutional problems with institutions that are themselves abusive. I'm taking it at face value from what Stephen and Megan have shared with me, that they believe that this is what's happened to them, and that they are struggling with the ability to be able to get out from under the weight of an institution. They're just kind of a normal couple who had two boys, And the younger boy is the one that was inadvertently injured when his mom tripped. She represents that she was taking him out of the crib and turned around and tripped over something, and they both went down, and she didn't realize it, but he had smacked his head. But when they did realize later that he was, you know, he was in trouble, they took him to the hospital, which is what you would do. And they weren't sure what had happened or what was wrong. Then they did these x-rays, and unfortunately they found a second, it sounds like they found a second previous injury.
Yes.
And I'll tell you what, the previous injury, it hasn't been explained yet, but I know that there are times when children, when they're being birthed, have ribs broken. It's part of the, it does happen. I'm not saying that's what happened here. I don't know what's happened here. But,
yeah, I can't explain the rib injury too much myself. All I know is that at the time that the, according to, like, they kind of hint at it in the, like, official, like, statements and stuff that they've made on the news. But they, even in the forensics, it shows that his rib injury was from when, at the time when he was first born, within his first 10 days of being born. And all
well,
those
10
days, he was in the NICU. He was under medical care.
Yeah, they don't take x-rays of children as soon as they're born. So this could have occurred even during the birth process. But anyway, that be that as it may, the fact, Charlie, that they found a second injury raised an alarm. And so they called in, I understand, that's when they called in the cops and the CPS and so forth. And it took several days. They separated the child from the parents, and it took several days of agonizing time for them to even, you know, see their child again. I understand. In any case, they have found themselves, the couple, I mean, embroiled in a argument, I guess, with the state, that the state believed that the mother had done something nefarious when she originally said that that she had tripped with the child. So that's kind of the now I'm seeing, you know, I know that there's been newspaper reporting and so forth that's talked about this. Your wife has actually been jailed, right, for this.
Yeah, she's still in jail right now. It's kind of horrible.
Right. It's horrible. So I did not know all the details of this. And, you know, Charlie's asking, did I vet you guys? Well, I did, to the point where I was of the conclusion that there was enough going on here that was upsetting to anybody who's dealing with, as I say, institutional abuse and enabling. We do cover that as a topic. And we haven't done it in a while. It's not an easy topic because it's a he said, she said, it's the government against the small guy. It's, you know, we don't like to think of our institutions as being heavy-handed, but they can be, and so forth. So we're not here to assign guilt. We are here to present the issue. And we, of course, Stephen, we can't know, you know, we can't defend either you or the people, but we can say that this is the kind of thing that happens a lot. I mean, this is very common, frankly. And you're right in the middle of it now. You weren't when you first got in touch with me. I don't think she was jailed then. So,
she's been in jail this whole time. Ever since, she's been in jail for almost 12 months now.
Oh, really? Okay. So you're going to have to fill in the blanks. You're going to have to fill in the blanks with some of this for us, because I want to be fair.
That's what I'm trying to do.
I want to be fair to you, but I also want to be fair to the audience. The case is ongoing, and it, from the parents' perspective, Charlie, it's a case of they've reached their last wits, because they, you know, claim the whole thing started with an accident, not a deliberate thing. Now, there's been other issues that have come up. I understand there's some allegations of, other kinds of abuse that have been accused and so forth. Charlie, I do want you to be straightforward. He said he wants to be straightforward, so please understand his position, and I get it. Charlie himself is a victim of some of the things we're talking about in his family. So we're going to have different positions here. This is not going to be an easy show. I'll predict that. But I think, again, the issue of institutional abuse and enabling, it goes on all over the country. And frankly, the common community member, the common citizen, once authority has decided, has an awful lot of trouble, getting out from under it. So that's where we're at. Charlie, I'm going to turn it back to you. I know you have some things you'd like to say, but I'd like to keep it civil, but present the case. And also the overview of the whole thing is happening, in our world. It could be medical, it could be family court, it could be law enforcement, it could be foster care, and so forth. But institutions do have a lot of power, and they can be abusive. All right, Charlie, let me give it back to you, and I'll stay active, too, in the discussion, all right?
All right. I would never, ever, ever, ever go not being civilized or not being respectful at all, nothing. So I don't want Stephen to feel like, oh, my gosh, what's going to happen? Okay, so, Stephen, that's not where I want to go. What I do want to share, Stephen, or at least have a moment to talk about here with you, is, while there are media, and trust me, I know the media twists things, the media has put things out there. I also know that, law enforcement has been known to, dare I use the word, and I will, coerce, confessions from people by not giving them sleep, not feeding them, not doing things that ultimately the person just out of desperation says, whatever you said I did, just, because they just want to get over that part of it. So my concern becomes in this show tonight is several pieces. Number one is because you have an active case, I'm going to tell you as someone who's been involved with helping families through similar situations to yours, you want to be very careful, even with facts, on what you share publicly, okay? Take that from years of experience, okay? Even facts can be twisted and misconstrued, and I'm sure Bill will attest to that in a moment here. I also want to say that while we're not afforded the opportunity to have Megan here with us, and I'm so sorry for your loss of your entire nucleus of family there at home, Stephen. I think speaking, unless she was here to speak on her behalf and her, understanding, and it would actually behoove not to have much conversation about Megan because of where she is at the moment, the fact that she's not able to be publicly with anyone and the adverse reactions that may have for her where she is. So, it's okay with you, and again,
I'm really focused on my kids on this show here. I mean, it was just kind of giving everybody the kind of the backdrop of the story, kind of how it started and what started everything.
And that's where I want to go is, and that's exactly you parlayed it right into where I was going with this, Stephen. Is here's my concern in what I've read so far, okay? And it's very simple. It has nothing to do with Megan. It has everything to do with you and your children. You, everything I've read, have not been accused of anything, have not had anything to do with anything, and yet for whatever reason, this system is keeping you, their biological father, the person that should be the next in line to be there for them, away from them. That therein lies, and that goes right to your children. There is, from what everything I've read so far, and I've read pretty intently on this, there doesn't seem to be any reason that you shouldn't be allowed to not only be seeing your children, but even have your children with you, unless it's not something you could do with your work schedule.
Well, that's the thing. They haven't been able to actually accuse me of anything. They tried to accuse me of failure to protect, but I mean that kind of got dropped, and then they just threw out this psyche vow and based it off of my military service, and ever since at first, in court, they brought it up, they said mental health assessment. I went and got a mental health assessment done, and that lady kind of, she was on our side. She was speaking up for us and stuff, and then they wanted me to get a full psychiatric evaluation instead, and every time I'd come up for it, it keeps getting rescheduled for whatever reason. I was supposed to go today and get it done again, and ended up having it rescheduled and stuff, they was trying to reschedule it till November 30th, but I got them to reschedule it for, I can go in either tomorrow or Friday. I'm going to go in tomorrow, though, to do it and get it done.
Okay,
and then
and
on
and
November 10th.
Please forgive me.
Yep.
I missed what you said you're going to go in to do. Please forgive me. I was distracted for a second.
Psychiatric evaluation.
Oh, okay.
That's
good,
the only
good.
Thing that they're holding. That's the only thing that they're holding on me as far as keeping my kid from me and stuff. Is getting
okay,
the psych evaluation done.
Right now, you may have heard me as the show began, Stephen, introduce NASCA and the fact that there's information on our website. What I would like you to do, matter of fact, before the end of the show, I'm just going to do it because everybody knows I do this anyway. I'm going to give you my personal phone line and have you reach out to me prior to you going to do that psych eval, and we can have a talk off, you know, offline, off air.
Yes.
Because I have an idea what you're going to be having to with and to prepare you for that so that you know. You know, you're not blindsided by things, okay? And that's only if you want it. I'm not saying you must do this, Stephen, at all, but if you want it, I'll be there to at least give you some heads up as to what they may or may not attempt to do. Your military record, you want to be very careful what you share out here right now, especially since this is an ongoing active case. But your military record, are you service-connected PTSD?
No.
Okay. So the military, you have nothing, military never diagnosed you with PTSD?
No.
Okay. Well, had you gone through it, and I'm asking you these things not to put you under a spotlight, but hopefully to, maybe there's someone else out there tonight, and so you're aware, Stephen, these shows actually get archived. Maybe there's going to be someone in the future that, this show, and they may be able to go. They may be going through something similar to you, and they may learn something about getting things in order. One of the things I would suggest you do, and again, this is again information being given to you and anybody else that may be listening. I would suggest prior to getting to this psych eval done by their people, you get in touch with the VA and see if they've already, if they more than likely did one on you before you were discharged. And see if you can get theirs. Now you have a copy from someone else independent of the situation that you can compare. Or if you go to do it tomorrow, get a hold of the military and get theirs too. So that way you have, you understand what I'm saying, helping you out with here?
Actually, that's a pretty good idea. I haven't really thought of it.
Well, if they did vet you and they did, and meaning vetting is went over you, reviewed you before you got out, and they deemed that you weren't and did not have PTSD, that would be very beneficial in your case, because right now, off of the evidence that's out there, and again, Stephen, I'm not saying this evidence is factual or true. It's just what's being presented in the case. I would say that at this point, unfortunately, Megan doesn't appear to be in a very good place at the moment, and I'm not just talking about where she is physically. I'm talking where she is legally. When you read what they claim, and again, I'm using very, very broad terms, but it deserves that because while they're allegations and while there appears to be a report of a confession per se, we don't have any of that information directly in front of us to say yes it is or no it isn't. We just have something written in news reports that could be all right. What we do know is we have a dad here tonight, you, who served his country with pride, who got out of the military, who, from all accounts here, looking at this, there's no reason you shouldn't be involved with your children based off the information that we know so far. And that's – I'm going to just want to clearly say this to the audience and the entire NASCA world and family who's listening. That opinion I just gave was mine and mine myself. It was, has nothing to do with NASCA, has nothing to do with the beliefs or the opinions of anyone else with NASCA. That was directly from me, Charles J. Stecker Jr., and I just want to clarify that. So, Stephen, wow. How do you feel
right.
about
Charlie,
doing around with our panel? We've got several panelists, and is that okay?
Yeah, Charlie, can I interject that when you were your attention was gone for a moment, he did share that they had a session with a counselor who gave a report back that there was nothing wrong with the couple, you know, kind of like that. So there has been an evaluation. It wasn't good enough, apparently, and this is one of the problems. The people who are in authority have a lot of money. You know, they can get the kind of expert that costs money. They can delay things. They have a lot of, not just money, but a lot of power. Let's put it that way. So he's already had that test. I think your idea about getting the military test is excellent. And now he has to go get another sort of deeper evaluation is what he shared when your attention was away for a moment.
Yeah, and every time I come up for it, it gets rescheduled for some reason or another.
Right.
I mean,
right.
It's
well, I just wanted to make sure Charlie understood that part of it.
Right. I got that general gist, but I do know that and you, but you probably know as well, Bill. I know you know, no one here knows more or less than the other. I do know that when this type of thing that he may be facing is going to be a lot more intense than something where they would have just both of them together doing a general evaluation based off conversational things.
That's correct. That's correct.
Yeah, so going back to our special guests, and again, Stephen, what an amazing courage you've shown to be here tonight and to share what's going on with you and your children. I'm getting ready to go ahead, and we have three panelists currently in. We do have an international show, Stephen, so you're aware. So your story, your children's story, is being transmitted across the globe. We actually have panelists
amazing.
Tonight from Australia. We have a panelist on here tonight calling in from Australia. We have Canada. I share that with you to let you know that your message is getting beyond just the walls of your home or just the walls of this broadcast. It's actually getting out there internationally, okay?
Mm-hmm. All right.
All right.
And I want to assure Stephen that, you know, our focus is the kids. All our shows are focused on the kids. Obviously, we care
mm-hmm.
about what happens to his wife and to him. But the children are completely vulnerable in this situation, and they have no authority. So
yes.
The innocence of the child is why institutional abuse and enabling matters to us, right?
Yeah, you guys
have so much abuse
and
neglect over my son and foster care. I mean, they've done a number on my oldest son. I mean, he's right now he's fighting Lyme disease and a staph infection. I mean,
I have Lyme disease, and Lyme disease isn't necessarily something. Actually, it isn't something someone could give him, you know, so unfortunately that might have happened anywhere, but I'm not saying anything else is in this case. You know, and again, by all means, my concern is definitely, as Bill said, the children, but also, mine is also on you, because from what I'm seeing and reading and everything, the multiple things I've already read, there's no reason that I can see that you shouldn't be at minimal, at least allowed to see your children and interact with them. Real
exactly.
quick, we are getting ready to go to the panel. I so appreciate your patience and waiting to get on. We're definitely getting to you here very shortly. I just have one real quick question, if you don't mind. The little one the infant that was on that was taken and was put on different life-saving ventures after the unfortunate accident. How's the youngest one doing now?
Well, as of December 30th, he was cleared of his head injury. But
how is
he
as of October 28th?
He's I don't get to like get through to him too much. I mean, I call and call and call. I don't get any information. I ask my social worker and I ask my lawyer, and I don't get no information out of any of them.
I don't get no callback from where he's at. He's fine. He's got I know that he's got a trach and a feeding tube in because when they put the breathing tube in back in November, on the night that we took him to the emergency room, they used the wrong size tubing, and it tore his airways up real bad, and he kept growing scar tissue and stuff, kept closing his airways up. They did a few surgeries on him, and then on December 30th, he was released from the hospital, all clear, and then 4 days later, he ended up back in the hospital with complications with breathing and sucking and stuff, and he ended up having to have a trach and a feeding tube placed in. Go ahead.
I'm sorry. Yeah, just a quick question. I definitely want to get to our panel because they've been patiently waiting. Do you know if your sons are together in the same place or are they in separate placements?
Are you
even aware of that?
Yeah, they're in separate places. My oldest son is in his second foster home because I had to fight and get him to move him from one. And then my youngest, he's in the Home of the Innocents in Louisville. And he just recently had a bout with the coronavirus, too, that put him back in Norton's for a little while. But he's all cleared from that, and he's doing pretty good. He's overall doing pretty good. I mean, I think once they actually let me around him, I think he'll improve even more. I mean, he's missing that love in the room from his mom and his dad, and, you know, that helps, you know.
Oh, yeah, I understand and agree with that. Well, as I said, our panel has been so patient in waiting this evening to get on. I'm going to go ahead and bring them, each of them on panelists. I am going to ask you to kindly be cognizant of what we're dealing with here. If you've been listening to the show this evening for a while, you have a general understanding. And let's be judicious in how we interact with Stephen tonight. This is very touchy for him, for his children, and for his wife, who unfortunately is not currently there with him. So I'm going to bring on the first thing I'm going to bring on Stephen is her name is Katharina, Alberta, up in Canada, and I'm going to bring her on with you. Okay.
All righty.
Hey, Katharina, you're on with Stephen.
Hi, Charlie. And hi, Bill. Thank you for having me. Stephen, you know, as everyone's talking, the thought that comes in my head is, I wish this man could just speak and just share your story. And I know that there are barriers in place right now to do it in full, but I understand the desire to just have your voice heard, to want to share, and to possibly maybe reach someone that can help you deal with this. Because what I hear is someone who's, well, first of all, you have a very interesting and complex experience that, you know, sadly happened to your family. And it's so sad. I mean, I'm not surprised, you know, institutional abuse is common in Canada. You know, and this may
everywhere.
Or may not be the case. It's everywhere. And you don't know it exists unless you come and you face it. And then when you face it, there's a shock. And it's almost like your mind is trying to make sense of what is happening. And then you're forced to navigate the systems, which themselves are very complex, confusing. And, you know, like, it's just not clear cut. It's not clear cut. I'm sorry that you have to deal with this, but I have a feeling that you're really working on addressing these problems in a healthy way, like in a positive manner. And I have a feeling that everything's gonna go just fine. Like, you know, this psychiatrist evaluation, whatever you need to do, you know, do consult with Charlie. He has some experience. You know, just, you know, keep on pressing on. I know this is really hard, and I can tell you want to speak, and I really
want
to hear your story.
My family too much to stop pressing forward.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. So I can see you coming back on the show when this is all over, hopefully, and then everything can be out in the open fully, because then there's no investigations or whatever. But just so you are aware, you have my support as a human being to human being. I feel your pain. This is not in your head. These things do exist. It happens a lot. And I feel your pain. And I love what I'm hearing so far, just the story. It's opening up my eyes. Because I know we have things like that in Canada. So now I see that things happening in the U.S. And it's all complex. But I just want to wish you all the best. And I do want to listen to more of what you have to say. So I'm going to let someone else speak. So much for being on the show. I'm glad I
called.
Thank you, Katsudina. We appreciate you. Steven, we're going to go over to the land down under right now, over to Australia, where we have Bob. And matter of fact, Bob is into tomorrow already. It is, 14 hours ahead of us over there. So let's get Bob from Australia on. Bob, you're on with Steven.
G'day, Stephen, my brother.
How are you doing, man?
My life is awesome because I created that way. But everyone's on their own journey. I just want to honor your courage in sharing your story. Most of it I missed due to technical difficulties with my teeth and the internet this end. And just want to let you know that, you know, thank you for reaching out, and I just like to say that I'm here for you. You know, you're not alone. NASCA is here for you, and if you, you know, if you want to share face to face, just go to the NASCA Zoom meetings. I found them very, very beneficial. But
absolutely.
Yeah. You're not alone. We're all victims of victims. And by sharing our stories, we heal each other. So thank you for adding your spice to the cake, my friend.
Oh, I love it. Bob, I wouldn't have it any other way.
Thank you, and thank you for calling back in, even with your technical difficulties and your dental difficulties. All right, brother. That's Bob Darling, also known as Bob Eden, but I affectionately address him as Bob Darling, and he addresses me as Charlie Darling. So, Bob, thank you so much, brother. Next, we're going to Darlene from Tennessee, Stephen. Darlene is a regular caller on our. She's also one of our ambassadors, but she's a regular caller on our panelist. Darlene, you are on with Stephen.
Hey, Stephen.
Hey, how are you doing?
Fair to Midland, I suppose. Okay. You are very brave to speak out against what is happening with you, because so many people stay silent.
Oh, that's not my style. Not when it's such dire stuff on the line like my family. Oh, I'll stare the devil down for
that's
my family.
Awful. That is awesome hearing you speak like that. So they got them a good parent right there. Thank you for your service in the military.
Oh, no problem.
Darlene, thank you so much for being here.
I appreciate it.
I appreciate you and your constant support of NASCA. I do want to remind, and Bill, I'll be coming to you next. I do want to remind our listeners that if you would like to call and be part of the panel, we would be more than happy to have you. The number is 646-595-2118. Again, that number to call in and be a member of the panel, 646-595-2118. Maybe you've never called in anywhere. Maybe you've never speaking about your story, but you want to make that first step. Well, call in and let Bill know, who's assisting me this evening, that you just called in to make that first step. And he'll let me know, and I won't bring you live on air, but you can have that feeling that you're right there and you're one step closer to having your voice heard, because that's what we're about here, helping people. Well, we're about many things, but one of those is helping people whose voices. Hey, brother.
Are you asking me?
Joe might have his mic muted at the moment.
Are you asking me, Charlie? I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Were you asking
me? There he
okay.
is. He's back. Yeah, Joe, I just wanted to give you a moment to interact with Stephen, and then I'm going to ask Stephen's permission to share an article I just got done reading. But go ahead. I'll let you guys interact.
All right. First thing I want you to know is that I have changed things slightly on the front page of the NASCO website, hopefully to make it more efficient. There are other people out there who would like to be participants on our show as a special guest. And looking for the open dates is a lot easier now, at least for the next four or five open dates. I've got them listed on the front page of the website. And, of course, you can always go to the current schedule, too. But you'll see it's self-explanatory. Under the dates for this week, there's a second block now of things in gray that say not yet booked. So that's just a note for anybody listening tonight, an easier tool perhaps for the next four or five open dates. I also want to note that on that page is the information for how to get to the Zoom meeting that Bob has attended multiple times and he recommends for you, Stephen. So you'll see the number and the times of those meetings is three times a week we do them, and they're in the afternoon, and we'd be delighted for you to take advantage of those meetings. They happen on Sunday, Tuesday, and Thursday, so there is one tomorrow afternoon at 2 o'clock Eastern time.
Awesome.
Lastly, and please do feel free to call in. As you said, there's a community of people there who gather regularly, and we share our experience, strength, and hope. We have different stories and so forth, but the topics that come up are according to what's on the mind or the issue that someone in the group is facing, and we just go from there. Now, I do want to say the last thing I want to make sure I just cleaning up business is that, as I said, we've done scores and scores and scores of these type of shows. We don't do them anymore, but we have a page on our website, which is called the Jill page, J-I-L-L, because that was the name of the doctor who used to help me present this issue on institutional abuse and enabling. So you go to NASCA.org/Jill, J-I-L-L, and all those shows will show up. And you will see we've done many dozens of them over some period of time until Jill got too busy. So they're all there historically. And we don't do these shows on a regular basis anymore. But as you can see, there's a lot of interest in the issue of what's happening to kids not being abused by necessarily the family, but by the institution. Because what's keeping them from moving forward, progressing in their lives, your children's lives, is a block that it's extremely difficult for. Assuming you're a good-natured, sounds like you are, a well-meaning father, you have a big impediment that's very powerful, that's between you and your children, and between your children and you, and the children are completely helpless in this situation. They're pawns, and so this is why we occasionally, at least, want to make sure people understand this. As Ekaterina says, it goes on all the time, everywhere, and it is not limited to your case or your state. It's everywhere, all across the country.
I think I'd love to see it actually change. I think that's where the real reform needs to be taking place, really, because the children are our future. I mean, if we let them destroy our children, we're letting them destroy our future. I mean,
exactly.
Right.
So this is an additional kind of abuse that children confront that most of us are not really thinking about. And I agree with you. Many of these systems, they really need to be not fixed, but dismantled, reestablished. But anyway, Charlie, thank you for letting me interject those thoughts. And I'm happy to be here for the rest of the show as well to help you in any way, both of you.
Thank you. I appreciate that. And I do want to say I did take a quick look at that. I did notice something different when I was introduction with the NASCA with our mission statement, but I didn't peruse. I got to say, I really think that tool you put in there for the shows that need to be booked yet is really great because it makes it really simple. So it looks good, brother. So thank you so much.
My pleasure.
Stephen, I had alluded to asking your permission, which I'm going to do now. to read a piece I found in reference to your case, written by and I ask you, I know it may be sight unseen for you, or maybe you're aware of it, but I think it has a it actually is very pertinent to what we're talking about this evening, and I was kind of pleasantly surprised to come across it. It's written by, or did you read an article written by the head of CASA out where you live, Stephen?
Yes.
So you're familiar with that article?
Yes.
And would you mind if I read excerpts from it? Because there's important
Go
things
ahead.
In here. Okay. I want you to hear this, okay? Just so you're aware, CASA is a court-appointed special advocate. It is a program. I was actually sworn in CASA in Philadelphia. It is a program where the average everyday person on the street can go and get some training to actually become the voice of the child in a courtroom, okay, and to assist in that child's well-being. And it's a one-year commitment once you get a case. But the reason I want to bring this to you is there's some very important pieces in this article written by, or let me see, it was written, yes, it's written by the head of CASA, the executive director of CASA out where Stephen lives. And here, I'm going to read you just a few things real quick. In the wake of last week's child abuse charges against 32-year-old Megan Bratcher, where law enforcement said she took her four-month-old child to the emergency room following months of alleged, and again, we use the word physical abuse, CASA Ohio Valley Executive Director Rosemary Conder said it's time for the community to not just talk about the event, but take action. Now, listen what I'm going to say to you folks, okay? I know some things right there are like, well, wait a minute, what did you just tell me? Listen to what she says, okay? Rosemary Conder and a CASA program coordinator, Ashley Evans Smith, said this occurrence of child abuse has rocked Davies County. As though both CASA staff members deal with abuse and neglect against children on a daily basis, the first-degree assault Bratcher inflicted on her child was more severe than most, they said. Again, these are allegations, but here comes the powerful stuff. All right, here we go. And this is what the crux I want our listeners to grab a hold of. Stephen, again, I don't know if you read this or you recall it, but this is important. And while it's easy to judge, condemn, and even hate the mother for the admitted physical abuse against her child, Conder and Evan Smith said the underlying issue of abuse and neglect against a child always stems from something deeper, and that it's not only the fault of the mother, but to some degree, everyone. Wow, huh? And I'm going to read one more quick paragraph, and then, Stephen, I'm going to turn it over to you. Here we go. Ready? And listen, this is important because in my advocacy work, I focus on the abuser as well. And in this case, we have alleged abuse. We're not saying it's founded. We have what's said as a confession. We don't know that may or may not have been coerced. And we don't have Megan here to speak on that genre. But one of the things I always said in the person who is out here advocating end child abuse as best I can, as fast as I can, if we have a founded abuser, we know there's abuse, and we don't do anything to help them, we're all not treating the cancer, we're treating the symptom. And that's where this paragraph jumps in, and this is so vital for everyone to leave because we need to reach out to people that even if they're not being abusive, but we think they are. Here it is. Ready? Stephen, thank you so much for letting me share this. It says, we don't know that Megan didn't come from an abusive childhood. We don't know what the relationships with men in her life had been in the past. This is an opportunity for our community to say, how can we prevent this? What can we do? And then they go into asking about needing volunteers, what they do. But this is, people become paralyzed after hearing stories like this about abuse and neglect. They might feel it's not their business or they don't want to get involved. For many, it's so overwhelming, it's easier to turn a blind eye. But should people be more involved when they hear these stories? According to Conder, the director, the answer is absolutely yes. I'm just going to stop there because it is a little longer, but it says incidents that happen to the Bratcher child require a call to action from the community. The community can come in and help. Someone knows. Everyone at some point or another knows the situation is going on, and sadly, admittedly so myself, we don't do what we could do or what we should do. We tend to go, it's not my business. And in my world, child abuse prevention and intervention is everybody's business to get involved in someone else's business when even think it might be happening, even if it isn't. But, Stephen, I share that with you, and I thank you for allowing me to share that because there is support for your wife in there. And no one here, myself included, is saying she did or didn't do what the allegations state. Again, but if there was, this is something we're not doing, and it needs to be done in society, is helping those of us who are abuse survivors. I myself, as Bill alluded to earlier, was a product of a very abusive childhood. And again, in your case, so far from everything I've read, there's absolutely zero reason that I can see based off of my information and my expertise, in which isn't any professional, mine's real life, that you shouldn't be involved with your children's lives. I mean, I see a reason possibly to keep mom at least insulated, and she should be able to at least talk to them and have that interaction, because at the end of the day, that's affecting the child. Okay, the child still needs mom and dad. They don't understand, but there doesn't seem to be any reason why you shouldn't be able to have active, unsupervised interaction with your children, especially this far along. I mean, we're talking almost a year ago here. So I'll be quiet and allow you to take off from there, Stephen.
Yeah, I most recently, you know, in the past, I'd say for the past month, I've been able to get my wife, that got him to allow me to do video chats during my supervised visits with my son. That, I mean, a lot of them get canceled and stuff, but I went 4 months during the COVID lockdown without being able to see him. But they finally agreed to let her start having video chats with him and stuff, which they're only 15 minutes long, and he's only 2 years old, and but at least they get to see each other, and he does recognize her as soon as he sees her, and he grabs the phone, and taking the phone from him when it's over with, it's just kind of heartbreaking watching him cry like that, because he was a big mama's boy. He's a big mama's boy. But they talk about it, but then when it's their people and their own doings and their own neglect of the child, I mean, like with my oldest son, I mean, I've got multiple pictures of him with every, I mean, I went the first half of this whole ordeal, every visit I had with him, he had a new mark, a new big bruise on him somewhere, I'd take the pictures, I'd take the videos and stuff, and I would, you know, try, and I even contacted the CPS worker and my lawyer and stuff, and like, hey, what's going on? Why aren't these people are doing a number on my son. They're guilty. You know, why are they getting away with it? And then they ended up moving into another foster home, which they've been a little bit better, but, I mean, they allowed him to bust his knee pretty bad a few weeks back, and he got a real bad staph infection, you know, from it, and it got all the way up to his arms and under his arms and stuff before they even took him to the hospital to get it treated. And I mean, I'm like, I just think to myself, like, if it was just a normal citizen, they would have, you know, we would have been in trouble for that, you know? They would have took our kid or somebody's kid over that, you know? Why are these people exempt from the law that we've got to abide by?
Right, I hear you.
I mean, go ahead.
No, please, you're sharing.
But they, I mean, like when he fell and he bumped his head, I mean, it ended up with him having hearing loss. And I mean, he had to have tubes put in his ears, which was extremely painful for him, you know, I mean, to correct it. And they argued with me for 5 months on it. I mean, and on the day of the initial fall, when he got me holding my lifeless son, I mean, he's lifeless. I mean, he was there, but he was knocked out. I've got the pictures and stuff to prove it. He was comatose, and it took 8 weeks for that bruise to go away. And I got a pretty big hand. It was the size of my hand, and it was big and purple, and he needed to be treated for it. And they just laughed at me and made me hold him and made light of it. And that was a caseworker and a social worker. It was one of my very first, I think it was my third visit, I think.
Wow. That's incredible. And
it continues. And then they most recently I let him go on a back in July. I let him take him to North Carolina, Myrtle Beach. Let the foster family take him. They asked for him, and I figured, hey, I don't want to. He's in a pretty good foster home. They're not doing too choppy of a job, but that, I mean, they sent me a picture of him. They're in the middle of the ocean, he dangling him in the air pretty much without a life preserver on. I mean, that was horrifying for me because, I mean, anything could happen, and I mean, I mean, it's not that they had him on the ocean. It's just that they didn't have him with a life preserver. I mean, that scared the crap out of me.
I understand. And there's not and it's things like that you need to keep documented. Again, like I said, I know this is an ongoing case, and you want to be cautious in you know, what you say. But you also want to, when you see things like that, document. I can't say
yes,
it enough. I say that to our listeners as well. You know, document everything. Write it down, even if it seems minuscule. Have it that way. You have the date,
then,
time. You have everything.
And then I bring up all this.
I'm sorry.
Oh,
no, that's okay.
I bring it up to the social worker. You know, and I've even got that posted too. I got the text messages on that. I brought the issue up to my social worker. Her exact response was, "Accidents happen."
Okay. Well, and you and I are going to have a conversation tomorrow sometime, and we'll have a conversation in relation to how you can address that in a way that's beneficial to your child.
Yeah.
I do want to say that one of the things I also learned while on this show tonight is that in the state of Kentucky, everyone, and I like this, we need this across the country, everyone is a mandated reporter of suspected child abuse in the state of Kentucky. It is against the law in the state to not report child abuse. That's the way it should be everywhere. And then we only got to make it against the law. We got to get people actually do it. We are.
Mm-hmm.
I'll tell you what. I always. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I think that. I mean, I see it a lot in like just around my town. There's a lot of people. I mean, there's a lot of child abuse that just goes. And neglect, and I mean, it just goes unnoticed. I just had a interaction with a cop last week. They came to do a wellness check on me because, I mean, I guess I posted something and it made some of my people that's been following me and supporting me kind of worried, and they did a wellness check. I mean, I love them for it, but I mean, I'm fine. I'm not suicidal or anything like that. I don't have a lot of people around me, you know. I'm a pretty private, secluded person. I really am. I don't have a big crowd. I really don't share my emotions and things too good. But I try to journal it or release it a little bit, and you know. Well, the cop said, you know, he was even like, you know, yeah, that we have, you know, you have no idea how many times I've been on a call where I thought they should have took the kids, and they didn't. And then later that day, I go on another call, and there's a situation where they shouldn't take the kids, and they take the kids.
Yeah, well,
I mean,
yeah, we can't. You know, I know there's no doesn't seem to be any rhyme or reason. Hey, I usually say this at some point in the show, and now bears that time. We always we talk a lot about 90 minutes seeming like such a long time before we start the show. And then the show starts.
Mm-hmm.
And before you know it, 90 minutes is rolling up on us. And we are I think, about 15 left at the moment. I'm looking, let me see here. Yeah, about 15 minutes. So I want to do another round with the panel. We did lose one of our panelists. That's not unusual, Stephen. Please don't take that
mm-hmm.
as a personal thing. Sometimes phone lines and or life happens at home in any way. Well, but let's do another round with the panel. Is that okay with you, Stephen?
Yeah.
All right, we're going to start off with Katharina from Alberta, Canada, and then we're going to go to Bob in Australia and then follow that with Bill again. So, Katharina, you are back on with Stephen.
Thank you so much, Charlie. Stephen,
yeah.
God, I just, I keep, I just, sorry, but I know we can't do that tonight.
I've got it posted on my. I've got the whole story. I'm constantly on it, like posting about it and sharing it as much as I can on my Facebook. Message me, whatever, anytime. I mean, I'm on Facebook and I've got the whole story, every bit of it. I'm not holding back. I'm not lying. I have nothing to hide.
Exactly. It's your story, right? But I'm just I feel so privileged to have a firsthand experience with what you're going through, like through hearing your voice. And I mean, I'm definitely more aware. It always comes back to this, you know, corruption exists because there's a couple of bad apples in society. Wolves in sheep's clothing, they can be found all across the board. Mm-hmm. And when people are in positions of power, they often will abuse it. You know, whether that's the case with you or not, I mean, I have a feeling you'll figure this out, but this is exposure. It's exposure. And we need to talk about it, you know, especially when there's kids involved. No one can take care of your child better than you sometimes, you know, and foster care systems are not perfect, for sure. I'm so sorry your kid is dealing with stuff, especially injuries or medical stuff or whatever, all those things. Like, that's just horrible. A child's safety should be number one. Like, that's the number one priority, regardless of who is taking care of the child. So I just want to say, keep being strong. You know, keep doing what you think is right. And I have a feeling that someone will help you, because sometimes we have to keep trying to reach out, until the right person comes and they have the leverage and they have some authority to get things going and the competence to make things happen. You know, so keep on searching for that person. Don't stop for being here. It's been a pleasure to listen to you. Really.
I appreciate you, darling.
Thank you, Kathleen. And we appreciate you being here as well. We're going to go ahead to Bob in Australia next. Give Bob a moment to get to his mic. Bob, you are on with...
Yeah, can you hear me?
Yes.
Yes, can hear you fine.
Yeah. You know, just stepping back from this and looking down from the tops of the trees. Currently, you know, we're living in such a sad society. And it just points back to what we've been talking about for the past few weeks, that hurt people, and they don't need punishment. They need healing too. But I'm encouraged by the number of people that are coming out and speaking their truth. Because by everybody sharing their truth, we are manifesting the change in the human society. So I take my hat off to you for sharing your truth. You're part of a collective that's part of a wonderful awakening where we finally will rise up to live in a community of compassion and care and support and love instead of this monster that's slowly dying. So good on you, mate. Keep on sharing your truth. I've got your back.
I appreciate it. I love you for it.
Thank you, Bob, for being here this evening. I truly appreciate you calling in from Australia. We're going to go back to Bill. Bill, you're back on, brother.
Thanks, Charlie. Stephen, I want to assure you that you know, you mentioned that you're isolated and you don't have that many people around you and so forth, but what you've tapped into tonight is a community, as Bob just said, that really does care about each other and cares about situations in the world. So while you heard all of us, starting with Charlie and then going to Darlene, Ekaterina, Bob, and myself, we want to support you. But we're the tip of the iceberg. Because if you go on the NASCA website and then join the NASCA Facebook groups, you'll be able to find a lot of other supportive people and phone numbers. Frankly, on the website, there's many, many phone numbers of people you can call at any time. And most of them will, when they answer their phone and hear what it's about, want you to call back. I mean, you've tapped into something that's really amazing. We all love each other very much. We act like a family. And you're never going to be alone again, Steve, if you don't want to be, okay? Now, my point, my last point, Charlie, is that as has been mentioned by others, there is such power in the institution, in the system, such power that the little guy, which Steve represents tonight, and his attempt to guard his own children is really at a loss, because they have at their disposal every bit of power, money, authority, the ability to request things, to have experts come on, all kinds of things. Their attorneys are generally more powerful, and they do this all the time. So when an individual finally is able to get some kind of legal support, and often it's, you know, not to the caliber that would be needed. Some judges are in on this. It's a really bad situation. And here's the thing: the children are the ultimate victims. These two kids,
absolutely,
you know, have they are just stuck in the whirlwind of what's going on around them, and there's no way out. If there wasn't a Steve, they could easily be swallowed up. But Steve, obviously, you're going to fight for them. I don't want you to lose hope, because we're here to help you, to support
them. With every beat of my heart, I'd fight for them. I'll never stop.
That's right. We can hear that in you, and we honor that in you.
Even after this is over and I got them, I won't stop fighting to protect them and never let this kind of thing ever happen again.
That's right. And it's happening, as I say, all over the country all the time. Again, go to that folder, Jill, NASCA.org/Jill. To hear a whole bunch of other shows, look at their descriptions and so forth, and you'll see how many involve family courts and foster care and medical and so forth. You'll be astonished. Anybody will who's listening to tonight's show. Charlie, I appreciate your allowing me to book this family and give the platform for NASCA to hear the plight of the children in situations like this, because we used to do it once a month. And we don't do it that way anymore. So occasionally we will want to keep this kind of the focus, the highlight of the issue, because it is part of the NASCA mission to protect children no matter what situation they're in, to prevent this from happening in the future. So thanks, Charlie. I'll be quiet and let you finish up the show with Steve. But Steve, we really appreciate your honesty, and obviously it's plain to us your passion and love for your children is there. And please do talk to Charlie tomorrow and others of us. If you wish, we're all over the website with our phone numbers because we want you to call. All right?
Oh, absolutely. So, I will reach out.
All right. Thank you, Steve. Thank you, Charlie.
Thank you. Thank you, Bill, and thank you for coming in again. Just a quick reminder, everyone who's listening tonight, October 28th, 2020, say a quick prayer for my usual co-host, Penelope. And I was going to announce it tonight with her here, but she's not here. I'll announce it anyway. Bill's first time. He's actually going to be hearing it, as the rest of the NASCA family as well. I had a conversation with Penelope earlier in the week about her possibly beginning to take on a role as a host. And to say she was excited would have been an understatement. And so I will be working with her. You will periodically hear her coming on to this show as the host, with me backing her up as we get her feet wet in hosting. And then perhaps one day soon she'll have her own Stop Child Abuse Now show where she hosts the majority of the time. So I just thought I wanted to share that news with everyone. And
she definitely will, Charlie. I spoke to her today, too, and in regard to her medical emergency and so forth, but we got into this as well. And I want to express my appreciation for everything Penelope's already done, and ask again, as you have, for folks to pray for her tonight. She'll be fine, but she needs prayers.
Yeah, I know
so
she'll be fine.
Give them to her.
Right, exactly. I don't want to put it out there. you know, just because she didn't give me permission to do that. So, just, but yeah, she's not in life or death, as I said earlier in the show, but it's definitely not a place you, anybody wants to be, and just keep her in your thoughts and prayers. Stephen, I want to get back to you and allow you, we've got a few more minutes left here. Let's take a quick look. Yeah, we got a little bit of time. Stephen, I just want to give you, and I know maybe you feel like you were a little throttled in what you were going to share tonight, and I didn't mean it that way. I truly, my intentions were to make sure that you are best prepared to be the best advocate you can for your sons and your wife. And with that, being careful in how much, and I applaud you being totally transparent. I encourage that. I do also know that at times when it's an active case, sometimes less is better, at least for the time being. Again, I in no way meant to throttle you or have you not share what you felt you needed to. So take the next few minutes and share what you will, and then we'll prepare to close the show out.
I've shared quite a bit. I've got a lot more I can share, but I don't think we got the time. I basically want to try to give a shout-out to my wife and my kids, Megan, Daniel, and Ethan. I love you, and I don't know how yet, but I'm going to save you. I'm fighting hard for it. Just stay strong. I will find a way somehow.
Steven.
And I'm not going to stop once I get done with, once I save my family. I'm going to keep fighting and try to help others and save other kids and other families going through the same stuff. I know I'm not alone in it. I know there's all kind of people going through the same things for different reasons. And I love everybody.
Absolutely. I want to say that, you know, I can feel, I'm sure others can feel your sincerity, your passion, your emotion. And I can somewhat identify with what it feels like to lose family overnight, because that happened to me in my adult life with my marriage, but it was different. It wasn't what you're dealing with your wife incarcerated and basically from a parent standpoint, feeling like your children are incarcerated as well. Even though they're not in jail, they're kept from you. And their limited access and not having access, you know, sibling access, even in founded cases. And again, folks, this is not a founded case. This case has not yet been fully decided. But even in founded cases, siblings shouldn't be kept from one another. They had nothing to do with it. And I can tell you firsthand from my own experience, I have a sister who's just 3 years younger than me, and we have minimal relationship. I'm closer to some people online than my own biological system kept us apart. So, Stephen, you're a strong tower. You're a pillar in society. Thank you for your service to our country, service to your family, and you being here tonight and sharing yourself with us.
I appreciate it. I appreciate you having me on and letting me spread my word out a little bit. It means a lot.
Absolutely.
And
we appreciate you. And we appreciate you, Stephen. And Megan, I know you can't hear this right now, but someday when you're home with Stephen and your children, you're going to be able to go back and hear this into this show. Folks, this has been Charlie Stecker coming to you with the Stop Child Abuse Now radio show, brought to you by the National Association of Adult Survivors of Child Abuse. As I end each of my shows, I remind everyone, if you are an adult, the only adult not responsible for and prevention is any adult who themselves was never a child. Good night. God bless. Stay healthy. Until tomorrow. Bye-bye.
Another tomorrow, 'cause that's gone with you. You are forgotten after all that you've done.
Blog Talk Radio.